get on the train. Pimpin' ain't easy.
Hello, but welcome back to Podding Ain't Easy here on the Rogue Opinions podcasting feed. I am one of your hosts today, Scott McLeod, here to talk about the final two episodes of season two of Loki, potentially the final two episodes ever of Loki as a TV show. We'll get to that later on in the show. And joining me, as always, to discuss this, he is the Omni-Man to my Invincible. Hi, Carl.
Hello, you all right?
I'm all right, yes. We'll get to Loki in due course, but I mentioned Invincible Season 2 last week, and I encouraged Carl to go and to at least give the first episode a chance, and I got Carl's immediate reaction sent to me later on in the week, so Carl seems happy with my recommendation.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen it floating about on Amazon Prime for a while, but because it was like an hour long for an animation, that sort of put me off. I've got nothing against watching animated programs, but I always find when they start going over the 20-minute mark, they start getting a bit, well, they can start getting a bit boring. But no, this is well done, to be fair.
Yes, definitely takes you by surprise how violent it actually is, doesn't it?
Well, it does, because it sort of saves the real violence towards the end of the first episode.
And trust me, especially when it comes to Omni-Man, it's going to get worse in terms of how violent the show gets. Where exactly are you at the minute? Because I think you've carried on with season one.
Yeah, I'm on episode four now. I've just watched episode four, should I say.
That's cool. So I think there's about 8 episodes in season one. There's going to be probably 8 for season two. They already confirmed a season three as well, which is good. But apparently they've said, oh yeah, we're only going to air 4 episodes of Invincible in 2023, and then we'll release the other 4 in 2024. Like, no, because that means the 4th episode of season two will be at the end of November. So like, yeah, we're just going to skip December and we'll make you wait till January at least to get the rest of it.
Have you ever seen other shows recently popular? That's a trademark marketing gimmick. I think they know a lot of people's renewals are up probably around December-ish time because people buy these things, you know, get these things as Christmas presents and and whatnot. So, you know, they're making sure you're going to keep your subscriptions going.
Especially Amazon being involved in it, like, you're not going to cancel Prime now, come out for Christmas. You're going to need us to order your stuff at the last minute because you can't bear us going to shops.
I'm not.
I mean, yeah, I definitely prefer ordering stuff when I can. not the last minute, I try and do it in advance, but yeah, it's definitely easier than, you know, going into town because, fuck me, the city centre in Glasgow during the lead up to Christmas is not a nice place to be in, and it's one of the worst times for something. One of my pet peeves, which is somebody through a busy street stopping in front of you, and you need to then quickly sidestep beside them so you don't accidentally walk into somebody.
I hate that. But, you know, I live in quite a small rural town, so I don't know these things like a big city in Glasgow when you're trying to do your last minute shopping. I can imagine it's utter chaos.
Yes, Carl's a simple country boy. He doesn't know the big city ways like us.
I don't want to know them either.
yeah, you're better off. Yeah, I mean, I do like, you know, getting everything I can is, I don't know, it's far away from the actual time of Christmas as I can, so that, you know, my dad and I used to do a thing where we would go into the town on Christmas Eve, not for anything important, just for little things that, you know, we knew we'd still get, and I'd just potter around and just watch people just like, look at them, they're all running around like headless chickens.
I have found that working in a charity shop is pretty good for finding presents that you can, or things that will make good presents, and you can sort of buy bits and over the course of the year and get them ready. Oh, that'll make a good present for somebody. Oh, that'll make a good present for somebody.
Oh, where'd you guess? Oh, I searched Italian love for. I definitely didn't get out of a charity shop.
No, 100% not. No. Look, says Marks and Spencer. Yeah.
tis the season right enough. But other than someone else superhero related, and I wanted to talk before we got into Loki, is, you know, it's been a big day in the world of Hollywood, you know, the last week or so, because the SAG-AFTRA strike is finally, AFTRA strike finally ended, which is good at multiple levels. One, it means no more John Cena on WWE TV for the foreseeable future. After he got killed by Solo Sikoa at Crown Jewel, John Cena, who made everybody think he was retired or teasing retirement when he put up the end or that's all floats kind of thing from Looney Tunes. But no, it was the fact that despite the strike being over, Warner Bros. Discovery was going to take a Coyote v. Acme film that John Cena was in, even though it had pretty much been shot, and they were basically going to do a Batgirl to it by just like binning it off. But I think recently it's come out that they've relented and said, oh, you can actually, the producers can shop it to other networks now. So we will thankfully get to see some sort of Wile E. Coyote film starring John Cena, which I'm sure is a cinematic masterpiece we're all waiting for.
He probably went into some bigwig's office and gave them an attitude adjustment, I'd imagine.
Absolutely, all the way from Saudi, but you're telling me I can't be in the same film as Wile E. Coyote. Is he just trying to like star in every like things with all sorts of like old school like childhood fears? Like he's done a Transformers film, he's doing a Looney Tunes style film. What's next for John Cena?
Hey, man.
Yes, yeah. But let John Cena can't be He-Man anymore. He's not as big as he used to be. Let him be. Let John Cena be Grayskull. Let's see him get a chance at that. Just John Cena running in until we meet again. But it's nice to see that the strike's over. You know, the actors getting, you know, what they deserve and everything. And it seems that everything's fast tracking, and studios are very keen to get back on track with some projects that were delayed. It's also caused Marvel to switch around their schedule for the next couple of years in terms of when their films are now going to come out. So the new schedule apparently looks like Deadpool 3 coming out July 26, 2024, Captain America 4 February 14, 2025, Fantastic Four May 2nd, 2025, Thunderbolts July 25th, 2025, and Blade November 7th, 2025. So I should mention, I haven't seen much in terms of the superheroes both on Marvel or DC other than Deadpool 3 coming next year, so it might actually be a relatively quiet year for superhero movies considering what we've become accustomed to next year. But 2025 is going to be very busy with these films, and apparently a sequel to Robert Pattinson's Batman's set to come out in late 2025, and in the summer we're getting James Gunn's Superman movie as well, so you get a bit of a rest period for most of 2024, and then 2025 is like, right, we're back at it again.
Yeah, it might be a good thing to have a bit of a break from all the superhero films for a year, might, you know, apart from perhaps the Deadpool one. So, yeah, might be a blessing in disguise, to be honest. People might have a more appetite for them again.
Yeah, especially given that they've moved things back, I think that means that, I think they were talking about either they're going to do two Avengers in one film or they're going to do one in 2025, then 2026. But I think now it seems like it may be a case of both, like Kang Dynasty, if that's where they're going, and Secret Wars will come out in 2026. So moving those further back, and like you said, get building the appetite. I think again, 2025 is good because, you know, the branding of the Avengers, given what we've had before, you know, you expect to make big money from that. So if people don't have the appetite, then, you know, it's not going to be many people going to see Avengers, which you wouldn't think would be the case after the last one, but I think it's just we've become so oversaturated with it.
Yeah, it has a bit, really. Just too many films, and not a great quality either the last year or so. And if, you know, you can hear what sounds like subbing. That's just Nathan crying because he's got to wait another 2 years for Blade.
Cheers, Marvel. Kids are crying now. Thanks. I know. Apparently, if they get to their proper like schedule and everything, Blade's original release date was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's meant to be on Nathan's birthday, apparently.
And he's now sworn vengeance against Kevin Feige and whoever else. He was going, there's an action film, a John Wickstyle action film. I want to see just Nathan going target a list of Disney and Marvel executives and going on a revenge mission. Well, speaking of revenge missions, apparently there's going to be a fifth John Wick film, which apparently
so.
I haven't seen the fourth one. It's on Amazon. I'm going to probably finally watch it at some point soon. But I'm like, Jesus, I've only seen some of the third one, but I'm like, how much further are you getting? I was surprised they did a fourth one, let alone a fifth one. I mean, Keanu Reeves is like, when he started, I could probably do so many of these. By the fifth one, he's probably like, don't know how many more of these I want to do.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, Liam Neeson's 70 and he's still making action films, so you know it can be done. I mean, the third film wasn't the best, but the fourth's a much better entry, to be fair.
Oh, I'll take your word for it. But so things seem to be, like I said, moving. Blade is not going to come out until we've still got to wait 2 more years for Blade. But you know, Nathan's been waiting an eternity, so he can wait a little bit longer. And that is the much anticipated. The countdown will begin now until we can get Nathan Greenway's thoughts on the brand new Blade. Is exactly 2 years away. So set your watches, everyone. Set your calendars. But I've seen all sorts of stories about how things have moved since the strike came out. Like David Harbour from Stranger Things said, he got a phone call from one of the producers basically saying, oh yeah, we've arranged your flight to this location, we're filming tomorrow. He got that call 10 minutes after the news came out the strike was over.
They aren't wasting any time, are they?
No, they're not. So we're going to get moving on Stranger Things, which is apparently going to be the final season. And David Harbour himself said it takes up almost a month to shoot just one episode of them. So obviously, if they have a target when they want to have the final season commit for, they're like, right, we gotta get to work now.
Most kids are gonna be middle aged men by the time they've got season 5 done, so I don't know how they're gonna make it work.
I know. It's gonna be one of the weird ones where you watch back a long run TV, so you see the young characters, like you see them when at the start of the show and then you see them there. It's like the kids in Game of Thrones.
And because of like COVID as well, there's like there've been massive gaps between series, so they have gone from looking like actual kids to looking like flipping full-fledged adults.
I know, and when you look at how long has bed death happened in the continuity of the show between seasons, like you see how long it's actually happened, and like, geez, that's a mighty big gross bear you've got. All coming back, hair under the armpits, deeper voices, and that's just the girls. It's just a joke. I don't know where I'm going, but I'm happy to see that things have been reshuffled, and you know, there's all sorts of stories that Marvel are kind of trying to rethink things, and maybe possibly even reconsidering the ideas behind where the MCU is going in the multiverse saga. Like, there's even talk that they might just move away from Kang altogether and potentially make Doom the big bad, which I think may be slightly a bit too late to go with that idea at this stage.
Yeah, it depends what they want to do, really. If they can find a way to make it work, Dr. Doom is one of those characters who's powerful enough to maybe he could steal Kang's technology or powers or something. It's the sort of thing Dr. Doom does in the comics and whatnot. So we'll have to see what they decide to do.
Because obviously, the Fantastic Four of the films that's coming out, like the future films that have been announced, is one of the more anticipated ones. And there are some details kind of coming out about it. Like, there was no mention of Doom in it. They did say that they live in their own universe, and then they'll also come into it at some point later on. But it said that the events of that film will really help set up Secret Invasion, or sorry, yeah, Secret Wars, not Secret Invasion, that's a whole other kind of worms. It'll help set up the Avengers Secret Wars. There was no mention of Doom, but they did say that there was likelihood that Galactus and the Silver Surfer would be involved in it, and hoping for a more accurate Galactus than the big smoke cloud we got back in 2007.
I was going to say, I hope he's a bit better than a smoke cloud.
Yeah. I didn't mind the look of Silver Surfer in that film, like, considering the time, I think it was the best you could have gotten, but didn't like Galactus. But there was no mention of Doom in the description there, but I like the idea they're skipping over the origin story, much like they did with Spider-Man when they reintroduced him. And so that'll help tie them into our universe, and I want to see how they tie Deadpool and Wolverine that into you know, the MCU, considering also the events here at the end of this show, the TVA is meant to have some involvement in Deadpool 3. So how the events of this show set up that, I don't know. But
it sounds like Elektra might have a big part in it as well, so let's hope it's a lot better than the Elektra we got in the Daredevil and Elektra films.
I didn't even watch the Elektra film. I didn't even know there was Elektra film until years after it came out.
Well, likewise.
Yeah, and considering the bloody Daredevil was on. I mean, I watched the director's cut of it. I don't know how I got my hands on the director's cut of it, but I've heard a lot of people say the director's cut is much better than the theatrical cut. Like, and I watched it, and I didn't see all of it. I watched it, like, Jesus, how bad is the theatrical cut? But you know, I'm sure we'll have enough like TV for Marvel to kind of tide us over, because I think we've also got like some animated shows that are still coming out, because there's obviously all that stuff about X-Men 97, Marvel Zombies, which is also maybe rated TVMA as the Marvel Zombies, much like the upcoming Echo, which is coming out. We've got, I think they're still planning on doing a Moon Knight season 2, so if you're into that.
Oh, goody.
I didn't hate Moon Knight, I don't know what your issue is.
I don't think I'll be watching season 2.
Ethan Hawke is a mental cult leader and bloody, you know, Oscar Isaac doing his best Dick Van Dyke impression. Anyway, well, I'll just shift this along, shall I, before Carl gets even more upset. Go ahead and get started on the subject of Venom. But
no, too far.
Loki, that's what we're here to talk about. Loki season 2, we'll start with episode 5, obviously, called Science Fiction. It picks up right from the ending of episode 4 after the temporal, and seemingly kind of, there's been an explosion of the temporal radiation after Victor Timely was untimely ripped apart by radiation. And Loki, there's a bright light. Loki opens his eyes and looks around, and everyone else has vanished, and he's kind of wandering the TVA. And unfortunately for him, his time slipping returns, and he's like, no, this is not happening again. And he sees a version of himself as he walks into the main TVA room, and he goes to walk towards it and then disappears as that Loki looking at the TV handbook. And then he jumps forward, but it looks like he's just jumped forward a few minutes into the future, because then he's picking up the TV handbook, and then there's a version of him in the foreground walking towards him, and then that disappears. So kind of a manipulation with like where Tom Hiddleston standing and kind of editing it together, so you can play two multiple versions of Loki in a single like shot. But then everything starts falling apart in the TVA, and just before Loki's concerned that everything's basically being destroyed, he kind of disappears, time slips away as the TVA falls, and there's that screen where they monitor their branches, and just Miss Smith comes up as the screen crash goes, thank you for your service.
Yeah, so it's a clever opening in the fact that Loki has the TVA handbook. That becomes an important plot point a little later on in the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen a lot of people saying that the way the TVA kind of falls apart, and there was a voiceover, like there's an alarm going off, it said TVA protocol, whatever number it was, and spiel theorizing, and this is basically what the TVA does, this is how Heat Who Remains reboots it every so often, like, because everyone got sent to different parts of the branch or secret timeline. So the idea, like, okay, everyone gets moved back to their timelines, we reboot the TVA, they come back, their memory's wiped again. Maybe that's how it works, I don't know. But But then Loki starts time splitting. How conveniently Loki starts time splitting exactly where everyone he needs to find happens to be. First finding Casey, who in the Brand's timeline, I can't remember the name of the prisoner, but much like when Loki was revealed to be D.B. Cooper, Casey was one of the inmates that escaped from Alcatraz in the 60s.
Yeah, I was a bit confused at this bit at first. I was thinking, what the hell's going on there? And then I realised, you know, because Casey doesn't strike you as a hardened criminal, does he?
Yeah, I know. And then so he's breaking out, they manage to, again, this boat tries to assure it. Loki tries to talk to him, but I think his name's Frank in this.
Yeah.
And he's like,
yeah, and his cohorts are getting confused. Casey, you said your name was Frank. It is Frank.
And he keeps on, like, we gotta go. If this guy keeps, if we get caught, they're gonna kill us like fish. And Loki then just ends up disappearing, slipping into different parts of time. And yeah, I think the real person that he's based on was meant to have a really high IQ, which is how he was able to, you know, escape, formulate his escape, which kind of explains Casey being the smart as he is, because he's one of the smarter people. He's one of the only other people that's memorized the handbook.
To be fair, he's probably the only other person who's bothered to read it by the sounds of it.
Yeah, as I said a couple of episodes ago, you know, he's a desk jockey. He's got more time on his hands to actually go over. But it mainly slips to 2012, where we see Hunter B-15 as a doctor. Given it said 2012, I thought, like, any moment I'm going to hear explosions, because every time we go back to 2012, somebody happened to be somewhere in New York at that time. You know, we had it in Hawkeye. We had it on all sorts of stuff. She's talking to this little girl who's hurt her arm after falling out of trees, and she writes a little reminder on her arm, don't climb trees, which is a nice moment. And she goes in the hallway, sees Loki appear, and then quickly disappear before they can even say anything. But of course, when you see, we've got to see everybody's lives, and we've teased in a previous episode, like, what has Loki even seen what his life is like on the timeline? Of course, what do we see? Well, a close up of Mobius on a jet ski, as a guy called Dodd, living in 2022, selling jet skis.
Yeah. For a brief second, yes, you think he's riding it, and then you realise, no, that's just like a background. He's not really in the sea. And yeah, he's a salesman. I knew his real life persona had to be something to do with jet skis, even if it wasn't actually riding them.
It just cuts it. It's like you said, it's a backdrop as an air fan, make it to try and simulate the idea of the wind in your hair as you're stealing. And the guy's just there helping himself to the free donuts. So, like, yeah, I think I might just sell for a dirt bike. And then there's a moment where Loki outside the lot appears, and there's a wacky wheeling Fiddler fairly tube man behind him. And so Loki's movements mimic the tube man. Which I think there's a scene later on where Loki tries to time slip and can't do it. He tries to, like, control it. And so the movements he's doing, I'm thinking, like, wondering, see, this is probably what it looks like every time he does it on set before they added the effect. So I can only imagine the multiple times Tom Hiddleston had to stand on set just flailing his arms a bit.
Yeah.
That seems to be kind of a go-to thing in, like, these superhero movies. Like, it's all sort of variation of waving your arms a bit and some sort of power appears, but, like, you never wonder, like, what does that look like when they're filming it before they've added the special effects?
Yeah, it's amazing how stupid something that looks cool can look without the right effects and razzmatazz to jazz things up.
Yeah, they do have a brief conversation, like, yeah, you know me from the TV, ATVs, don't we? We got a couple of those in the back.
Yeah, that was quite a clever way to sort of do that, I thought. Yeah.
So we kind of turns away, ask one of his colleagues about, like, do we got those ATVs upstairs, as he turns back and Loki's time slipped away. And my favourite of the Brand's Daily, because he's one of my favourite characters, probably my favourite new character we've gotten, OB, as a science fiction writer who tries to buy a copy of his own book, which he's hidden on the shelves of this bookstore, trying to create some demand and some buzz around his book, which no one seems to want.
That's quite hilarious. He's trying to sell his own book again.
Like, this woman comes with a big stack, and like, because the last thing behind the counter looks at bag, like, oh, did you, what, you wrote this? Then the woman who owns the store just comes with a big stack, like, stop putting your books on our shelves. Like, science fiction is an up and coming genre of fiction. Hell, not around here, it isn't. You see poor OB struggling to carry all the copies book as he tries to get out the door, and goes back to his little workshop, his little warehouse, which is, you know, mysteriously shaped much like his office in the TVA.
Yeah, so, I was thinking that. You say little, it's actually quite big for someone who's supposed to be struggling by the looks of it. He's still managing to afford this massive warehouse.
Well, he's got to have somewhere to store all those untold copies of his book. Because there's quite a few of them around. You know, it's a very niche reference, but I was talking to my brother about it when we were both watching the episode, like, separately, but I was messaging him about it. And I was saying to him, this has big vibes of Alan Partridge season 2, when Alan Partridge can't sell his book either. And he's standing in a service station right in front of a big stack, big cardboard folder, which is storing all these copies of unsold books. Loki ends up time slipping into the warehouse and explains to OB about everything that's going on, and he goes, wow, time slipping, that's kind of like the events in my book.
Yeah, like everyone's all baffled by what, when Loki's trying to explain it, and OB's just like, actually it makes quite a sense.
And so he manages to stay with OB long enough without time slipping to explain to him and everything, and the OB seems to be one of the only people who can kind of help him get the information he needs to try and, you know, get back to the TV, or he's back to that moment. And he goes, like, no, it's impossible. Like, if a place doesn't exist, how can you get there? And they have this whole discussion about it. And he's, I don't know, but also the device he needs, but obviously it doesn't exist in that time. And so OB would have to create it. And then, like I said, there's that moment where he tries to time slip at will, but he's just down like, it's not working. It's just, and then he manages to time slip. He tells Obi to make it, and he ends up time slipping back to see where Mobius' character is living, you know, as Dawn. These two boys, there's a space where his kid's like, Will you go get your brother? If you stop your brother, I'll give you a puppy. And a snake? We'll discuss that later.
Is that how you ended up with your dog?
No, trust me, I wouldn't want a snake. I know people who, cousins who own snakes, and I've not been around their house in a long time.
No, I don't mind snakes, but spiders are my cup of tea, and I have to sort of stop seeing a potential date, because went back to a house after going to the gym, and she had like this big fuck off spider thing, big fuck off tarantula, and whatever habitat thing there. And I was like, no!
Anyone with any kind of like snake or like lizard or any kind of reptile, like animals is their pet. I somewhat untrust, you know, rightly or wrongly. I just don't feel right.
Snake I could cope with, but a big tarantula was the deal break, I'm afraid.
I mean, it depends what kind of, what size the snake is, but like, I see pictures they put on social media, and they just let the snake kind of out, and I'm like, what happens if you can't find it? What happens if it goes missing?
I mean, there is that, yeah.
And plus, they kind of like pets, like your tarantulas or snakes, like, you need to feed, sometimes you need to feed them like live fucking mice or things like that, like, one, I don't have the time to find shit like that. And two, that's just cruel.
You don't have to find them. I mean, the places that sell them.
Yeah, but I need to find a place that sells them, and then you have to... You can't just buy one, you need to buy a fucking certain quantity of them. I do not want to get into discussion about the logistics of snake ownership with you on this show. And we've got all sorts of confusing time bollocks to talk about.
That's true. We've gone on one of our tangents.
But yes, Mobius ends up Loki tries to talk to Mobius again, and like, he just jokes like, oh, you didn't follow me home, did you? Like, oh, no, a friend of mine lives around here. And he goes like, oh, you're still interested in a jet ski? And he tries to show him these two jet skis. Yeah. And Loki ends up repeating one of the lines that Mobius had said describing the jet skis, like, that's a really good way to put it.
No, so everybody's getting their ideas from Loki. It's like he created every fan.
Well, he is a god, and he lives up to his moniker at the end of the next episode. But like, it's like one of those Marty McFly paradoxes. Like, you hear somebody say something in the past, and then ends up influencing them when they say it in the present. You know, the idea of going back in time and everything. Like, when Marty McFly inspired one of his favorite songs and everything when he goes back in time, plays it in the 50s. But then, as he's trying to describe him, he's trying to tell him about the TV and that everyone's in danger and everything. And then OB just appears through a time door, having obviously given the heat. OB gives him in 1994, and this is 2022, so he's had the time over the years to make it, and he just appears through a time door like, you made it. Well, I had a lot of time, man. Especially I had to have to move out when I lost my job, my wife left me. Anyway, shall we go?
He says, wow, that was fast as well. If you call 2.5 years fast.
I just love, like, we see the setup that he's got in that warehouse with all his books and everything, his weird, like, you know, equipment and everything. Like, this is not the environment or the hobbies of a married man.
But it really isn't, is it? Or a happily married man, at least.
I know. It's weird that all the detail, all the fucking science, logic and everything, but Tyson and everything, the most unbelievable, unrealistic thing I find is that Loki's variant, this branch timeline version of OB is fucking married in any form. That's about I have trouble, you know, wrapping my head around. So what that tells you about me, I don't know. But then he shows Dawn, like, they go back a few minutes and shows, like, him and Loki's conversation from a few minutes ago. Like, see here, like, I can drop you off at any moment in time, you know, your boys won't even know you've gone. He goes, yeah, but I'll know that I've gone. And he's like, you know, he's convinced them for the good of his boys, you know, in order to save them, they need to, he needs to come with him. And so he ends up, you know, he rounds up the gang, as it were. You know, he's getting B-15, he gets Casey and everything, and he tries to get Sylvie on board. And he assumes that given that after everything's happened, she won't recognize him either. But then she immediately goes like, Loki, what the hell is wrong with you?
I think he's forgetting that she's also a god and a variant of himself, so she probably remembers everything just like he does. And there's a nice little bit where you see sort of Casey sort of stealing little trinkets from Obi's thing. So the criminal's stealing him and he can't help himself.
Yeah, he said you see him again getting like evil intentions when it comes to the tent party, asking like, oh, you can go anywhere, any place with that kind of thing. Even so much so that they think he stole it later on when it disappears. But Loki goes with a drink with Sylvie and he's trying to give her the cells, you know, finding a way back to, you know, see the TV, because I think the theory is with having everyone back together again and reading their temporal aura, that will help them go back to before the TV was, to try and find a way to stop it. And basically Sylvie's still in the stance of like, the TVA is it's a bit part of the problem, so she basically isn't really in a rush to help to give it back, because she's still in her parents' timeline where she was working at McDonald's, so she's quite happy where she is. She's even pretty sure there's a moment does it happen here where like she puts her food, she has food with her before Loki appears, she puts it down, turns away, and somehow the foods disappear, because as we'll see later on, her reality is a bit to be destroyed as well.
Right. You just get the sense of how shit things really were for Sylvie if working at McDonald's is the good option.
You know, to each their own. And she's pushing Loki like, what do you want? And it's just as the guy comes to take the drink order, he just shouts very loudly, I want my friends back. And the guy just stares at him and she goes, two whiskeys, Frank.
That wasn't a dig at people who work at McDonald's in the way you think. I've got a friend who works at McDonald's and they're constantly complaining about how shit management is and that everything's always put on them. So I get the feeling that working for McDonald's isn't the best job in the world. The way you might be treated, right? Not that it's a job that you should turn your nose at, in case anyone gets the wrong idea.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard from people who have worked there that in some aspects it's better than what you may assume it is, you know, benefits wise, but you know, with like there's hundreds of McDonald's all over the place, so not everyone's gonna have the same experience, yeah. You know, working there. You know, but you know, Sylvie's working there in the '80s, so I'm sure it's a much more pleasant experience than it is would be today. But obviously it's like he's talking about how there's looking about how he feels about working at the TV and everything, and you know, how he considers everyone his friend, so he doesn't want to lose them. And Sylvie still doesn't like want to help, but she's always like, there's nothing you can do. And so he kind of accepts that kind of sense of defeat and tries to send everyone home.
And she sort of convinces Loki that he wants to save the TVA for selfish reasons, because he's like, you know, because of my friends, basically. And they're probably the only real friends he's ever known, the people from the TVA. So he's desperate to keep him in that way. But a few short minutes into the episode after that, we find out that Loki is probably right.
Mm-hmm. And because like he think he was trying to accuse her of being selfish for not wanting to save her, but she's like, we both have our own, like, we're both motivated by selfishness, you know, we're both Lokis, remember. And then we get a little indication of what else Sylvie likes to do when she's, you know, living in this particular branch timeline, where she goes to this record store, where she seems to be one of the only people that still goes to, even though it's the 80s, so people still have records. But she gets given this recommendation, she goes and listens to it, but while she's got her headphones in, like, he sees everything slowly start to unravel and fall apart. Like, there's a scene where, like, you almost blink and you miss it, where a guy walks into the store and then immediately disappears. And the guy's coffee disappears, and the guy who runs the store tries to run to warn Sylvie, but he, just as he's, like, inches away from her, he disappears as well. And Sylvie manages to use her temp pad to get out of there. And basically, you know, as Loki's better tell everyone, you know, go home and everything. Everyone's confused, but Sylvie comes back to him, basically saying, you know, the branches are dying, so you're right, we do need to do something, but they're a little bit too late, because then the equipment that they need it disappears, and they look at Casey immediately as a suspect. And he goes like, I didn't take it, and then turns out it disappeared, because, again, the timeline's a bit fall apart, and, you know, Obi Casey disappears, then Obi, then, you know, Obi tries to run in a vain attempt to get his futile attempt to rescue his boys, but he immediately disappears. And then as it looks like Sylvie's a bit to be the last one to go before Loki suddenly manages to go back to a few seconds earlier, realizing that it's, you know, not about a where or why kind of situation. It's basically who he's doing it for that allows him to control it, which when he wants to help save them, it means he can control his time slipping.
Yeah, and it's not like disappearing, is it? Like they seem to turn into these strands, and whether those strands are meant to be sort of strands of time, because Loki sort of touches and grabs hold of those, doesn't he? And that sort of allows him some sort of control over the time slipping somehow as well, which is a nice little thing. And like Obi said earlier in the episode, sort of has to sort of want it, I suppose.
I don't know how else to describe it, because like it's not like them turn to dust the way that they do in like Avengers.
Like no, it's almost like spaghetti, isn't it?
I have heard people using the term spaghettify to describe people disappearing, like being erased kind of from the timeline as things go on, as the timelines fall apart. So, yeah, they're all spaghettified, and then he goes back to just before Sylvie disappeared, and then went back even further with another attempt, like you said, grabbing the strand, and goes back to right before right as Sylvie, you know, made her entrance, and he told her, "I can do it," and he explains how that he now knows why he can do it, and basically like how far back he needs to go. And the episode 5 ends really nicely when you see, just as he sees Victor Tenley going down the stairs, and Loki appears behind OB back where he was, but obviously now with this Loki that has knowledge about, you know, time slipping and what's actually going to happen to Victor Timely.
Yeah, it's just it's a good episode. I enjoy it. It's a lot of people, and sort of like the magazines and that will give these like ratings didn't seem that high on this episode, but I really enjoyed it actually. I like the fact you got to see what some of these were doing in their past lives, especially Mobius, because that was never touched on before. And I quite like the idea of the episode that Loki's trying to master his time slipping and try and find out a way to stop time unraveling.
Yeah, I think it was just a case of the timeline. What they did in episode 4 didn't work, even though they were sure it would. And then obviously, I think it's just Loki dealing with the consequences of it, finding a way that you could go back right before all that happened. And obviously, that leads into the big plot, at least for the first half of episode 6, which is basically Loki with the knowledge of what he knows now, trying to find a different way of doing it right this time. So Loki needs to go through episode 5 to get the knowledge of how to do the time slipping and everything. Because when we go into episode 6, you know, he just watches Timely disappear again and immediately asks, what could we have done? And just present, what could we have done? And I was like, we weren't quick enough. So it's kind of almost the start of episode 6 is kind of like a Groundhog Day type situation, Edge of Tomorrow style thing, where they try and repeat it again and again, try to get Timely to be quicker and quicker each time.
Yeah, and then he's like, needs to be even sooner. How long would it take to learn how to make all this stuff and whatnot? And Nobi's like, decades, and it seems like centuries. And then we have a little thing that says centuries later. So he's gone to a lot of trouble to spend hundreds and hundreds of years, because he's not a genius like Timely or OB. So I think it'd take him quite a few centuries to learn all that and be able to build the thing himself. And then he's there quite sort of explaining how it works and pushing them out the door as soon as they've got to the TVA with Victor Timely this time, rather than all the other clowning around. So he's sort of pushing him out, and he's like, isn't this a bit soon? No, it needs to be now, and you volunteer, that's why it's you, and most of work, you've got to go quick, and remember, don't put the time thing down because it rolls off the platform. And you start thinking, so this isn't the first time he's had to do this, man, because it's obviously been a few cock-ups. And he goes out and he's about to put it down, and he's on the sort of top, the intercom going, what did I say about putting it down? It rolls off the platform.
it's not just him interjecting on bits we've already seen. Like, he kind of takes over the conversation that they originally had when they saw the model, and he does Mobius's line, oh no, it's perfect. And then he kind of takes over, this is Victor Timely in a little suit going through there, and then pretending me, why is it me? You volunteered, you do. But there's also little bits that he fills in that obviously we haven't heard before, but he's heard a million times because he's been doing stuff, and about where he's explaining how it works, and he cuts off a Mobius saying, watch out, Mobius, someone's coming for your job, because obviously he's heard Mobius make that joke in one of his previous attempts.
And they do look at him a bit baffled at times as well.
Yeah. I think you would have thought at least one of them, Mobius or Sylvie, would have cottoned on sooner. I think the idea of, okay, he's done this before, because they've done, especially Mobius of the TV, have done, dealt with all sorts of, people moving through time and everything, and you know, Sylvie's had to jump through different apocalypses and escape different through different timelines to survive and escape the TVA. So I thought eventually there was going to be a bit after another failed attempt where one of them was going to look at him with, because after every time he fails, he's like, maybe faster, and then he goes back. So you would have thought that at one point, the one of them would have stopped him, like, how many times have you tried this?
But yeah, and eventually he gets the, I forgot what that time thing's called now, he gets, puts it into the thing, into the loom, and the loom does expand, and it looks like they've saved the day, but then it still goes wrong, and Victor Timely assesses that it's not a, the problem is that it's, they'll never be able to make it big enough to hold all the timelines because it's infinite, and he goes, you can't accommodate or infinite.
Yeah.
And then Loki sort of decides, I've got to go back further, and he looks at Sylvie, and he's got to go back and stop Sylvie from killing he who remains.
Yeah. I do like one little touch I want to talk about there, when he does the rushed version of the introduction, but your family still lets out his little gasp at the thought of meeting OB, because obviously he's written on the TV handbook. Yeah. And it does actually, because we know what happens, and we do every so often, you don't always see, but every so often they still throw in that little scream, that high-pitched scream of indicating that, okay, that wasn't enough, okay, he still died, and so how many times he did to watch Timely die at this point. So the time where he actually does do the walk, and he actually does make it, you're invested and you want to see if he actually does make it this time. Like, I even thought when it turned around and he couldn't get the button, like, even in this another bit we haven't seen, but obviously Loki has, he went like, sometimes the button sticks, so he tells somebody to hit it a second time. But I also thought he was going to get through all that. Like, now all you had to do is push the button, and just as he pushed the button, he was going to spaghettify at that one moment. Like, Loki came so close.
Yeah, I thought the same, actually. And yeah, she says, that's obviously been a problem he's encountered in previous time slips, because, as you say, yeah, he's like, sometimes the button sticks.
And yeah, like you said, he realises, yeah, like, it's not enough, so he has to go back even further. So he goes back, we go back to the ending of season one, where we see, you know, we see Jonathan Majors again, but now hair shorter and back in the He Who Remains kind of get up. And immediately, again, you get to see, you know, the difference in ability of him in terms of how he portrays that version of Kang compared to the version in we've seen of Timely, you know, the one that's more clearly evil, basically. And again, the whole how many times he has to fight her and everything. Just off screen, you keep hearing him laughing as he gets stabbed. He goes, "See you soon," and he keeps going through it again and again and again until he remains kind of killed.
His win loss record against Sylvie is not looking very good at this point. It's like Celtic in Europe.
Sorry, I may have laughed a bit too hard at that.
That's a football joke that Scott's actually got.
Well, no, I'm laughing because I come from a Rangers family, so you know. There you go. Any excuse to laugh at Celtic. I mean, nothing against Celtic. Paul's fiance is a Celtic fan, but out of all Celtic fans, he's the one I like most, and that's not a high bar. Anyway, yeah, the way they repeat the whole "you'll have to kill me," like, oh, she does every time he tries it, and then to the point where he cuts her off and "you have to kill me too," when I start, "you have to kill me," all that. So to the point, I think, again, what I thought would have happened before, He Who Remains kind of cottons on first. And he kind of stops everything. He's like, "How many times have you attempted this?" And he makes Sylvie like disappear. Like, you know, she's just staring at us, and he makes her kind of disappear temporarily. And then he's kind of shocked, like, "Oh wait, is this the first time we're having this conversation?"
Yeah, it's quite a good bit, and he sort of mentions something about Victor Timely, and even sort of. Does his stutter, so
yeah.
He obviously knows who Victor Timely is and he does say something you think out of just say, yeah, and let you kill me, like some sort of backup plan.
Because it goes back to what Miss Minutes was saying about how clearly she knew more than Renslayer did about what he remains wanted. So obviously he always intended for her and Renslayer to take the book to Timely to, like you said, there was always going to be a variant of him back there. So that was obviously his plan all along. But again, this actually is very Thanos-esque, where Thanos, they don't stop Thanos from doing the snap, but they manage to eventually kill him. But then a series of events of them trying to bring her back leads a past version of Thanos with the knowledge of what happened.
Yeah.
Further, and the whole, you couldn't live with your failure, and where did that bring you? Back to me. And basically, Loki tried as he might to try and fix everything after they killed He Who Remains. They couldn't do it, and now here he is back with He Who Remains, who knows what's happened, and basically knows for the most part that his plan is kind of working. And basically, he's reinforcing the idea of, like, basically, this is what I mean, this is why there needs to be a me here, otherwise the whole, he's made himself and the TV kind of so crucial to the future of the time, and because he basically says, like, well, you could kill me, but without me, or a variant of me, everything falls apart.
Yeah, basically, everything was set up to stop this infinite war between, you know, him and his other variants trying to take control of the timelines on everything. So, you know, he's basically, you know, you can't, you know, without me here, it's just endless. It's just endless war and death and destruction. And he's just determined to find a way around it. Nonetheless.
Yeah, because he gives Loki like two options, like kill Sylvie, because obviously he can't beat her, but like kill Sylvie and join He Remains and keep everything in order, or basically destroy the loom, which would extend the branches and all the variant timelines, but also makes it more likely that his parents will be able to travel through, and the likelihood of another multiversal war will. And he basically says, like, you know, and he basically tries to say, I'm like, are you willing to, you know, we see the deaths of countless millions just to stop me by, you know, destroying the loom and starting another war? Because he warns him that's what's going to happen. And I do like that Loki, we don't know if this is the case, but he says, oh, is this the first time we've had this conversation? And he kind of presses play on time again, for lack of a better term. And then Loki freezes it again and goes like, what makes you think this is the first time we've had this conversation?
And he kind of lights up after, doesn't he? He remains, and he kind of, you always feel like he's got a tiny bit more respect for him, because he generally thought, I think that was the first time they'd had that conversation.
Yeah. So it's a whole thing where he keeps, like, because when he originally presses play, he keeps basically trying to get the message through, and he's like, maybe we'll go through this 100 more times until you finally figure it out. Because what he's saying is not getting through to Loki. And Loki ends up going back to a different point with Sylvie right before, you know, the timeline where they were trying to get everyone back together kind of starts spaghettifying. And basically he warns her there, like, he's able to stop time. He's like, right. He basically tells her, like, there's another way. He tells her, like, the branches are dying. You know, the loom can't account for infinite and everything. Basically, the TVA is important, but the only way to save everyone is to kill her. And he goes, well, I'll not give you my permission if that's what you're looking for.
Selfish cow.
And basically, he's trying to figure it out, and eventually Loki kind of comes to some sort of realization, and then he goes down with Victor Timely, and he basically then shoves him and then closes the door himself. And he walks out into the room with no protection. And it's kind of a heartbreaking almost moment where you see Sylvie and Mobius try to stop him. They're on the other side of the door. They can't open. So he always says to him is, I know what kind of god I want to be. And he ends up going out there. And he basically has to destroy the loom. As a sense of, yeah. The episode is also called Glorious Purpose, so it does seem like there are some mirrors to, like, between this scene and when you've seen the Richard E. Grant version of Loki, trying to, like, build that, trying to help take out Goliath in this first season.
Yeah, there's a little bit as well when he walks out onto the platform to the loom, that it looks like he's started to disintegrate, but it's quickly turns out that it isn't. He's just sort of changing his costume to a more godlike costume of the longer horns and a cape. But at first I thought, oh no, he's starting to disintegrate. And then I realised, oh wait, no, he's just changing his costume. And if he wasn't going to melt out there, why didn't he just go out in the first place, for Christ's sakes? There's poor Victor Tyvee disintegrating in an instant, and he's surviving quite happily out there.
I know. Well, I think another reason he kind of starts getting the horns and everything is he's obviously, they removed the thing a couple of episodes ago where it means he can use magic in the TVA. So
yeah,
and being a god, he doesn't immediately die. And he does end up destroying the loom, which does lead to it looking like a lot of the branches are dying. But it seems like he's using his magic to kind of bring life back into them. And, you know, tries to end up grabbing them and carrying them all together. And he basically, like, kind of disappear. Look at the whole, appears. A gap kind of appears, and basically it's a hole to, like, the Citadel at the end of time, where basically he has to sacrifice some hell in a way, when that, even though he doesn't die, he has to take the place of he who remains. So he's, as Sylvie said, he's giving them a chance. He's trying to find a new way of keeping the branches alive. And kind of doing what he who remains wanted by having, because he who remains wanted him to join him there, but basically he's like, I will be in the Citadel and I'll help control the timeline, but he's finding his own way to do it, doesn't conform to whatever he who remains' plan originally was. So they've kind of had to find his own way to find like a loophole and to stop him. So he rearranges the timelines and the branches together. It's a very extended sequence. It kind of goes on for quite a bit. And
he ends up like in the He Remains chair, like a spider in the middle of his web, because all the timelines in green with his magic just sort of all sort of surrounding him. And you get the picture at the end of the episode that it's a bit like when they look into the Matrix, you can sort of look into these timelines and sort of see what's going on. Well, that's the impression I was getting out of it anyway.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of said, it kind of rebuilds itself, and now Loki's sitting in the chair and he redoes the timelines to kind of make it like a big tree, like the timelines are branches, because they've called them branches. They're literal branches of a tree.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that bit, yeah.
So Loki's kind of overseeing it in a new kind of new way of overseeing the different timelines, and maybe he's hoping that now the TV and everything and him overseeing it can help stop a potential, you know, multiversal war. Should mention there was a cool thing at the start of episode 6, because we kind of went, I think a good reason for us to do both episodes together is the way they seamlessly flow into each other. But a cool thing about the start of episode 6 is that the MCU logo goes backwards.
That was a pretty cool touch, that was.
Yeah, I really enjoyed. But it went backwards. And so Loki is now at the end of time, and it cuts forward. I don't know how much further it goes, but it's... and the TV, everything seems to be back to normal somewhat, as you know, the TV are talking and they're looking for variants of He Remains, and they have off shoot conversation. Goes, I think there was one that popped up on 616 where they seem to have taken care of it, which I'm sure is a reference to Ant-Man Quantumania. And then Mobius is kind of revealed that he's leaving, and he's going to go see his timeline, his like place on the secret timeline, and he leaves, and there's this bigger war room with all these different people, and then B-15 takes her place in there. There's a scene where OB opens up a new box of TVA guidebooks, but it's a different colour, so maybe it's a brand new guidebook. Maybe he and Loki have written to basically create some new rules for the timeline to give people more free will, as it were.
Could be, yeah.
And then there's kind of a really somber moment for Mobius as he's kind of just sitting watching, you know, the very reign of himself dawn with his kids and everything. And he's kind of watching on, and Sylvie's standing with him and goes, you know, I'm just going to take some time here. And just kind of, he just kind of watches on. And it's kind of sad because you don't know what. You just kind of left wondering what's going to happen with Mobius scene. It's quite a sad ending for him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of bittersweet for Mobius. And he's apparently meant to be in the new Loki film. So he's obviously still going to be part of the TVA by the looks of things.
Mm-hmm. And then I think we do get at least one more shot of Loki, you know, amongst the timeline as the episode fades. No post credit scene, as I thought there might be.
Yeah, I was wondering if there might have been one. Yeah.
They gave us one at the start of the season, which is the weirdest time to do one, and then they don't give you another. And I really thought they would. A couple of things coming out of this, you talk about how people reacted to episode 5. Episode 6, from what I've seen, is a case of, like, episode 6 is very much like the season itself, where I've seen people, either you love it or you hate it. There's very little in terms of in between here, and either you love this finale or you absolutely hated it, because I've seen both out there. Because I think if you weren't immediately sold on Loki even up to the finale of this season, then obviously the finale wasn't going to be for you. And I've seen multiple variations of people liking and hating this, with one of my friends even saying, and I quote, that the finale, quote, sucked balls. So that's a very strong opinion.
I only seen positive reviews for it, but, you know, obviously I'm not following all the negative people.
Yeah, it just depends on who's on your timeline, as it were.
I think the people who don't like it are the sort of people that just don't like anything, to be honest.
Some people were convinced, oh, it was all talking but no action. Like, there was action. There was this scene with him and Sylvie. Like, there was somewhat action when you look at the scene with Timely and the tension of, like, is he going to make it, or is he going to get ripped apart?
Well, everything can't be all action all the time, for Christ's sakes.
I know.
I mean, these are the same people who love Andor when absolutely fuck all happens in 12 episodes of a season.
don't get started. Everything seems to come back to bloody Andor, even though I say, oh, I'm not going to go on about it, but it seems to constantly come back to bloody Andor.
But it's the fact that people love that and then they hate these other shows, which are basically better. They moan that there's no action, but there's no fucking action in Andor, and everyone was praising that. So what do you bloody want?
I don't know what to tell you, girl. I really don't. But I liked how I like the idea of basically they've kind of defeated a variant of He Remains without having to directly fight him and find a new way of. So I think it's maybe set up maybe potential new rules for like how the multiverse is, and basically there's not one sacred timeline, there are now multiple timelines, which means that they still go forward with Kang and everything in a multiversal war, then this will mean that characters can move forward more easily, which also means the TVA can still exist. Yeah, I think they should do more with the TVA. They're not going to do more episodes of Loki. The TVA is a thing, should exist more as maybe a new version of S.H.I.E.L.D. with the multiverse and everything, which means you can get more Owen Wilson, which would be nice. And things like that, and explain how you can get characters like the Fantastic Four and the X-Men popping up and later installments of like TV shows and films. So I think there's going to be stuff to do with the multiverse that's important, that's going to be tied back into this. But I think a main complaint from people who aren't into this is that I think there's some other properties out there that are also doing multiversal things. So I think very quickly people are like, I'm kind of sick of the multiverse, which if you're Marvel and you've got another phase and a half of the multiverse saga to go, you're probably thinking, ah, shit.
Yeah, multiverse does seem to be a bit of a bandwagon everyone seems to be jumping on just lately.
Yeah, so if you're a Marvel, you probably are having to reassess everything. It's probably good that that Deadpool is the only MCU movie coming out the next year, because even though that will feature time travel, it'll be in its own kind of Deadpool way, which will make it unique enough, I think, especially with Hugh Jackman being involved in it. And you've got time to kind of think, okay, what do we actually want to do with this MCU, which means people will actually come and watch our movies again.
Yeah.
Because the Marvels will eventually go and see it, I think, but the thing with the Marvels is every time I see it, it's just someone commenting, oh, Marvels had X amount, had the lowest thing of this, or this money this weekend, it's lower than this film, or the same amount of this film. So it's only negatives I see about it, but when I actually get to see the few people who have actually, you know, gone and seen it, you know, people are focused on how few people are seeing it, but I try and look at what are the people who have seen it actually said about it, and despite what the current Rotten Tomatoes score is, people that I've talked to who have seen it, are basically their main thing is, like, you'll be surprised by how much you actually enjoy the film, considering your low expectations around it. So it might not be the most groundbreaking thing, but from what I've heard, The Marvel is actually very enjoyable.
It can sort of help when you go into a film with low expectations, to be fair.
Mm-hmm. I had a good time talking about these kind of things in, when we did Ahsoka. So I had a quick look at the Rotten Tomatoes scores for season two of Loki. The overall score for the series is the same from Rotten Tomatoes as from audiences, which is an overall 81%. Episode 1 got an 82%, 90% for episode 2, 80% for episode 3, episode 4 got 67, episode 5 got 77, and then 69, nice, for episode 6. So it started off, the first three episodes are in the 80s and 90s, but it seemed to go down to the 60s and 70s in the latter few episodes. So maybe it's a case of, like, maybe some people were sold out at the start, maybe some people dropped off towards the end, but still very high scoring wise. I don't know how that compares to season one, but I think people who were fans of season one are still fans of Loki. So it is a bit down from season two, but I think some of that can be put down to overall fatigue of Marvel at the minute and overall frustrations that we know a lot of people have.
Yeah, could well be.
But Carl, do you have a rating out of 10 for both of these episodes and for Loki overall as a series, as season two?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably give, perhaps controversially, episode 5, I'd probably give an 8 out of 10. Episode 6, I'd probably give 9 out of 10. I'd probably give the season as a whole probably about a 9 out of 10.
I think I'd go around about an 8 out of 10 for both episodes, in my opinion. And I'm between a 9 and a 9.5 for the season overall, but I think I might settle on the 9. Might give an extra 9, half point if I give it a rewatch at some point down the line. But, girl, I know you were we've both praised this show. I think we've had a lot more good faith and a lot more trust in it than some others have said. But overall, as an MCU, probably now that you've got two seasons to look at, when you think of Loki, a TV series, has Loki as a TV series got up in your estimation, down, or is it still the same when you look at it as an overall package rather than just looking at season one?
Yeah, I'd say about the same, really. It met all my expectations for me. I still think it's probably the best series that Disney have done for Marvel, possibly the best overall.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm probably a bit the same as well. I enjoyed the way that they handled the whole Loki jumping through time and everything, the way everything was shot and together. I really enjoyed that aspect of it. Something important we should talk about is that this may not just be the end of season. It may not just be the end of Loki the TV series, because they said they have no interest of doing a season three. They said that they're basically looking at two halves of the same book or the same story. First half being season one, this being season two. So this is basically their perfect ending. Yeah.
Well, the way it ended, I don't think you could do a season three really without sort of retconning things and ballsing it up. So you are probably better off just leaving it as is. So I'm glad. I'm kind of, although it'd be nice to have more Loki, I'm kind of glad, because I wouldn't want everything to be ruined and undone just because some greedy execs demand another series.
Yeah, it's nice to me you can get a bit when concerned directors out there or showrunners do have perfect ideas for how they want the shows. Then we talked about it in the last episode. We talked about Eric Kripke originally. He had a plan for 5 seasons of Supernatural, ended up going for 15 seasons in the end. It still remained a popular show, but it wasn't what he
only 10 wanted. More than planned.
Yeah. He went by the studios went by the Frasier model. If less is more, think about how much more will be. Yeah. But I think Brooklyn, I don't know the exact number that they did, but I remember Brooklyn Nine-Nine, when it ended after 8 seasons, the director said, when they look at how many episodes are in the different seasons, the ultimate number that comes to the number of episodes was the exact number of episodes they wanted to do. They didn't want to do any more than that exact number. They managed to do the exact number of episodes they wanted to do. Or even 48 Hours, John Cleese has said that even though it was a pain in the arse to shoot, and that's part of the reason why we were happy to end after 2 series, that it was never actually meant to go much further than that anyway. So sometimes shows aren't meant to go over a certain length. But on the one hand, another person involved in Loki said that we like to think of we want to do stuff that's similar to Loki, but not Loki, the TV show, in terms of we like to think of Loki as our Breaking Bad and try to think of a way we can carry on this universe and try and find our way to do our own version of Better Call Saul. So maybe using an aspect of Loki, something to do with the TV or Sylvie, to continue that line of it without having to strictly do the continuity of Loki, the TV show, which it seems like a good idea, but you've got to be careful with spin-offs.
Yeah, you do, to be fair, because again, you can end up, depending on what the spin-off is, you can end up retconning and creating big logic and plot holes if you're not careful.
But as I was getting to, it's not just the end of Loki the TV series, but it seems to be the end of Tom Hiddleston. And this, whereas he was the day after this aired, he was on the Tonight Show and pretty much said that he sees the finale of season 2 as the ending to an incredible 14-year journey, pretty much all but confirming that this was him done as Loki. And considering, like you said, 14 years, he's been on a part of his first appearance being in 2011's Thor. I think he and Samuel Jackson are probably the two up there for the most appearances in Marvel properties over the years. So I think, knowing when it's your time to bow out, and I think this is that time.
Yeah, definitely. Probably is about it, say the way it ended of that character, it probably is about right for him to step away, and he probably wants to concentrate on other projects and stuff now, unless it becomes a bit Terry Funk and Ric Flair and keeps coming out of retirement.
The amount of times that Marvel, many things, stories about Marvel want to reboot certain aspects and bringing people back, it might be a matter of time before we see him again. Who knows? But like you said, there's only so long you can do that kind of role. And I think, while it's great money and everything, you get a character that people recognize, people have fallen in love with, I think he's gotten the chance to do more with Loki than they might have originally intended him to do, purely because of the popularity of his portrayal of the character. I think part of the reason he even got his own TV series is they were kind of confident in his kind of ability as a character and people's investment in him to carry the TV series. But when you also look at the other side of things, where you're playing one character for so long, it can limit your other potential acting opportunities, because I've only ever seen him in one or two other things in the time that he's been Loki, he was in that Kong Skull Island, but I can't off the top of my head think of many other things, big things that he's been in. So I'm assuming, like you said, he wants to explore other opportunities.
Yeah, it probably takes a lot of his time. Playing Loki, as you say, crops up in quite a lot of things, and it's done surprisingly well for someone who literally was supposed to be killed off for real in Thor Dark World, but it went down so badly with test audiences. They did that little bit at the end where it's revealed he's posing as Odin.
Yeah. He was the only reason I went to go see Thor the Dark, because I've seen him in the trailers and I enjoyed him, and I didn't really think much of him in the original Thor, but I liked him as the villain in Avengers and everything. That scene where Thor says to him, "Now listen here, brother," before he gets tackled by Iron Man, and he goes, I'm listening. Things like that, where the kind of buddy cop thing, which they even did in the third Thor film, them two in Ragnarok as well. But
yeah,
and even then, with the whole like Wii's kind of character, there's even all these stories as well documented. He didn't even audition for Loki. He answered the audition for Thor, was basically told no, and then somebody suggested to him, like, can you read for this part instead? And he ended up getting it.
Surprising how often that happens, actually, when people go in for a read in for one character and end up bagging a different character, like Cillian Murphy read for Batman. They didn't like him for Batman, but they liked him enough that they invited him back for Jonathan Crane / Scarecrow.
Well, like, I think Henry Cavill, he's even said he read back in when they were doing Superman Returns for Superman, didn't get it then, but they managed to get it years later.
He must have been very young. Because he's younger than me. So was that 2005? So he must have been about 20.
Yeah. Well, I think they were looking for a younger guy. I don't know how young Brandon Routh was at the time.
Brandon Routh wasn't that old either, to be fair, was he back then?
I mean, he seems to have looked the same age for God knows how long.
Doesn't he? Yeah. So the magic of fuzzy word.
So when he was in the Arrowverse, they had to do a variant of him which was older. So they had to put obvious grey highlights in his hair to make him look older for one scene. But so he would have been younger. So I think they wanted a young kind of guy. Like you said, it would have been 2005 when they were auditioning for it. And like 2 years later, he was in one of his earlier roles. I remember Henry Cavill being in, was he had a brief role in Stardust. And he would have, that was been 2007.
I always forget he was in that.
Yeah, pretty much Charlie Cox's rival for the affections of a young woman. So the case of we got Daredevil versus Superman, the fight, the true crossover we all want to see.
Charlie Cox is in it as well. See,
Charlie Cox is the main guy.
I only watched it once because the ex-girlfriend made me watch it. So I wasn't fully paying attention.
Yeah. I remember they were really pushing the main theme song at the time as a thing. And if you can get past that shit song being in it, then you can enjoy the film because Claire Danes is tolerable and you got Michelle Pfeiffer and Mark Strong as villains in it. You got Robert De Niro as a crossdresser. You got young Charlie Cox. It's a fun time for all the family. I unironically love Stardust.
I mean, obviously I remember Michelle Pfeiffer in it.
Of course. Yeah. And I said, you know, I enjoy it because it's got Claire Danes in it, who I usually think is very despicable as a woman. Anyway, moving on, where that's come to the end of the road, the end of Loki. And
no!
Unfortunately, yes. It's amazing. We've talked about season one after, just as we'd switched from the Mando pod to Pod 9 Easy. And now here we are, 2 years later, and we have concluded Loki, and Loki itself has concluded. So me and Carl are going to be back with some potential one-offs over the next month or so. We may not be weekly going into Christmas because I don't know how many ideas we'd actually have, but we are thinking of covering Echo in the New Year when that comes out. And we're going to keep our eyes peeled for new things to cover. I had talked to Carl about doing kind of a series review of season one of Invincible when he's got round to it, which should probably shouldn't take him too long, given he's already on episode 5.
So I haven't got that many to go, really. Now, I'm literally halfway through, so I reckon, hey, next, if you wanted to record again next Wednesday, I'd probably have watched it by then, I should imagine.
Yeah. I've been wanting to kind of watch it back myself, so I might just rewatch season one as well in preparation for this, because I remember most of it, but I'd like to go back and see if there's any little bits I forgot about. So stay tuned for that. We're going to have a review of Invincible. Maybe we'll do some stuff for season two. Hopefully don't burn ourselves out of Invincible too much. But it's a hell of a show. If you guys haven't watched it, do feel free to check it out before we cover it on this show. But Carl, other than this, and I know we've got some more Rant Bank content coming out. Have you got anything else you want to talk about? Anything else you want to plug?
No, not at the moment. Rant Bank's the only other thing I've got coming in the foreseeable future. Not doing the football pods at the moment because I'm just fed up of talking about how shite Man United are. And it's getting a bit boring now.
Yeah. I imagine so. Is it Rant Bank? I believe part one is out of our... Part one is out of our Game of Thrones ranking. Episode two has been recorded. It will be released in due course. Try to space some of these out because we're hoping that later on this week to record part three.
Part four, and then part five, and then part six, then part 757.
We actually think we kind of convinced ourselves that we could actually get across parts three and four, finish Reese's list. The only issue is we need to get part three recorded now because there's no way we're going to get part four done before Reese's kid is due. So, yeah, we'll have parts one, two, and three for you. And in about 3 years' time, part four will finally be released.
Probably about 16 years' time.
Possibly.
And as I said on that part, it'll still be out sooner than the Winds of Winter.
Yeah, it's funny because it's true. Also, Rugby Binge, you can find certain football content out there in the back gallery. You can find Nathan and Ben. I think they're still doing naked stuff. I don't know what they talk about. Rugby Smad Review is making its return slowly back into the feed. Scramble Around Podcast is doing stuff on this feed and on its own feed, both feeds, wherever you get your podcast. Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, give us a like, rating, or review on your platform of choice. Easy for me to say. And follow Rogue Paint at Rogue Underscore Paint on Twitter and Instagram. Follow me at Scott McLean 1986. Follow Scott and Paul Ram Pogger at SP Rambling. Follow him if you feel so inclined at Carlos underscore Fire 80. Oh, that I feel like I've been talking forever, for all time. I knew we had a lot to talk about, but you know. But, you know, much like podcasting, you know, coming to terms with the end of Loki is not easy.
No, it definitely isn't. I'm in denial.
Hey, excuse me while we and Carl go to our respective houses and cry for a little bit. See you next time.
Bye.
One, two, is this on? Yo, Jimmy, hit me with that Triple H. Yeah, you let the music keep playing.